We're reading from Deuteronomy chapter 22. We're going to skip about a few bits, but we're going to do Deuteronomy 22, 1 to 12 first. If you see your fellow Israelite's ox or sheep straying, do not ignore it, but be sure to take it back to its owner. If they live near to you, or if you don't know who owns, if they don't live near to you, or if you don't know who owns it, take it home with you and keep it until they come looking for it. Then give it back. Do the same if you find their donkey or cloak or anything else they've lost. Do not ignore it. If you see your fellow Israelite's donkey or ox fallen on the road, do not ignore it. Help the owner to get it to its feet. What? Ron, is this in the Bible? Right. A woman must not wear men's clothing, nor a man wear woman's clothing, for the Lord your God detests anyone who does this. If you come across a bird's nest beside the road, either in a tree or on the ground, and the mother is sitting on the young or on the eggs, don't take the mother with the young. You may take the young, but be sure to let the mother go, so that it may go well with you and you may have a long life. When you build a new house, make a parapet around your roof so that you may not bring the guilt of bloodshed on your house if someone falls from the roof. Do not plant two kinds of seed in your vineyard. If you do, not only the crops you plant, but also the fruit of the vineyard will be defiled. Don't plough with an ox and a donkey yoked together. Don't wear clothes of wool and linen woven together. Make tassels on the four corners of the cloak you wear. And verse 30, a man is not to marry his father's wife. He must not dishonour his father's bed. And then in chapter 23 from verse 9, when you set up camp against your enemies, keep away from everything impure. If one of your men is unclean because of a nocturnal emission, he is to go outside the camp and stay there. But as evening approaches, he is to wash himself, and at sunset he may return to the camp. Designate a place outside the camp where you can go to relieve yourself. As part of your equipment, have something to dig with. And when you relieve yourself, dig a hole and cover up your excrement.
Well, didn't they do well? Not just leading us in worship, but bringing us to God. Letting us be at the throne of grace. To touch him and be touched by him. Isn't that what worship is really about? So thank you, girls, for that. Thank you, music group, as well, because they had to work really hard to do all those different songs that we haven't sung before. And you did really well in coping with that. But thank you. We are looking at Deuteronomy, and we had that very strange set of readings. If you want to read the whole lot, there's also stuff about raping and in the field and in the countryside and in the city. And there's something on adultery, and there's something on sex outside of marriage. It's really eclectic what's in there. The Deuteronomy, if you remember, is the sermons of Moses parting after 40 years of leadership. He's standing at the edge of the promised land. They're overlooking Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim. There's one on each side. They're looking over into the land. And he's giving them the three sermons, three talks, his parting shots, if you like, to God's people to remember to be God's people. Because God has rescued these people. God has looked after them for 40 years in the wilderness. And now he's saying, be God's people wherever you are. It's also a covenant document outlining how God's people will show and keep the benefits of God's grace. God has rescued them. Now behave like God's people. How are you going to do that? Well, this document says exactly how it should be. The next four chapters, chapters 22 to 25, give a detailed outworking of the law on matters of everyday life. And a wide range of topics is in there that seem to be unrelated. Lost property, unacceptable clothing, raiding birds' nests, town planning, agricultural planning, marital difficulties, sexual offences, public health, and many more. The unifying theme is this: God's community must consist of good neighbours. I think that's the only thing that can bring all these verses together. Unless you want to do it piece by piece and go, oh, and now he's jumped to bird's nest. And now he's talking about tassels on clothing. Oh, and now he's talking about rape. It's as if, you know, Moses has suddenly become sort of demented in some way. You know, he can't keep a train of thought going. But he's not. What he's doing is he's exploding the law over every aspect of life. He's saying, you being a person who has received the grace of God should be changed in everything that you do. You should, you know, it should overflow into all parts of your life. Later, Jesus put this as the second most important law after loving God with everything you've got. Love your neighbor as yourself. And he's dealing with neighborly things to do. And what it tells us in this passage is that God is generous and loving. He is the God who gave them a rescue and will give them the land. Not because they've earned it, but because God is loving and gracious. Now, of course, we know the extent of that love and that grace more fully. He sent his only son to live and to die for us, so that we might be the people who inherit the promises of grace and live as loved and forgiven people. Your job is to live as a forgiven person if you have accepted Christ. And it's a mindset you've got to have, because often we can go around feeling guilty, even when we become Christians. And it's taking that guilt away to set us free to love and be loved. The biggest thing he can do for us is not just take our sin, but take our guilt, so that we behave like people without guilt. And you know what it's like to live with guilt. Every one of us has been through that time when you feel guilty. It's not a nice feeling, is it? It doesn't lift your soul, does it? It doesn't do anything good for you. Now imagine that guilt just being transferred to Jesus. And you live without it. That is the grace of God given to each one of us in Jesus. To live without the guilt, because he's taken it. And God's people should reflect this in everyday life. My God is generous. My God is loving. And I want to reflect that without the guilt. I'm not saying he loves me and I'm a guilty, miserable sinner. I know I am. But I'm not going to live like a guilty, miserable sinner. I'm going to live like someone set free. I'm going to live because God is generous. I want to be generous. Because God is loving, I'm going to be loving. And I'm going to trust that Jesus is going to deal with all that other stuff. That is the faith that we have. Reflect it in everyday life, not just in worship. No one in God's community, whether in ancient Israel or in the modern church, should live selfishly or carelessly. That's what this is saying. If you've received the grace of God, stop living as if other people don't matter, as if God doesn't matter, as if you're still at the center of the universe. Every believer has a responsibility when they're part of a community to treat the people of the community as family. And I find it amazing that people are attracted to a church because it is warm and generous and kind. But they don't want to contribute to the warmth or the generosity or the kindness. They just want to take it. And that's not a Christian attitude. God calls us into community so that when we need it, we can take the warmth and the generosity and the kindness, and then we give it to those that need it in our community. This section of the covenant says, if you see it, don't ignore it. Do something about it. Get involved. That's the message for those who have been set free. If you see it, don't ignore it. Get involved. If you see your neighbor's garden needs digging, if you see their milk bottles have been knocked over in the days when you had milk delivered, pick them up. If you see there's a parcel that's stuck by the door and it's in danger of being stolen, do something about it. Don't just say, ooh, I wouldn't leave that there. Get involved and be the good neighbor wherever you are. God calls his people to be distinctive. And for that, he calls for three things in this passage. He calls for dedication. If you make a promise to God, keep it. Pay your vows quickly, he says in chapter 23, verses 21 to 23. Jesus made it clear that all vows and promises should be kept. If you say you'll turn up, turn up. If you say you'll serve, serve. This is about keeping your word. And he says, don't just keep your promises to God, keep your promises to everyone. If you can't, or if you forget, then you do the courteous thing and the right thing. It's not saying this is only for perfect people. It's saying be part of the community. Turn up and serve when you say you will. And if you can't or something delays you, make your apology. You'd want that, wouldn't you? So, love your neighbor as yourself. He calls you to be dedicated, not only to the promises that you make to God, but in how you treat your neighbor. He asks you to trust him totally and remind yourself that knowing God personally is a privilege. You know, we Christians forget what a privilege it is to know God. We have no right to know God unless we're perfect. And I don't think any of you are. And I know I'm not. It's a privilege that God takes our sin and removes it so that he can see us and we can see him. And he calls us to that dedication of reminding ourselves by every possible means. Because we keep reminding ourselves of how good we are, how deserving we are, and we're not. So this is what he says in this very passage that we've been reading. He says, remind yourselves that knowing God personally is a privilege. By what you wear, how you weave your garments, how you plow your fields, how you plant your crops, how you treat the foreigner, how you treat distant cousins, how you treat your in-laws, and how you treat the difficult person in your own house. Have I missed anything? remind yourself that it's a privilege by how you deal with these things. The way they knew before this, they'd learned from the Egyptians, who invested magical properties in linen and wool mixed together. You don't need magic. So don't knit those two together. Don't weave them together. They planted vegetables between the vines and indulged in incestuous relationships. You don't need those things. The ways of the Canaanites were even worse. They mingled sexual practices and played dressing-up games, which led to various promiscuous acts and swapping clothes in fertility rites, done in the name of religion. Don't you do that, he's saying. You see, all of these little things that he's saying, don't do this and don't do that, it's because other people were doing it, and you are God's people. Don't worship God their way. Don't do the practices that they do their way. Do things God's way. And he's not calling everyone in the world to this. He's calling God's people. You want to show that you're special to God? Then behave as God would have you behave. That's the message of this. So love your neighbor as yourself. Treat yourself well as well. Don't indulge in those things. Behave as one of God's people. That's what all these little rules are doing. They're combining together to say what God is not like as well as what God is like. Now you're one of God's people. Put everything under God's leading. Don't copy them. Listen to God. And that would be my message to you today. Don't copy everyone else, whatever their standards. Listen to God in the way you bring up your family, in the way you talk to your neighbor, in the way you treat your spouse. It might be acceptable everywhere else, but what does the Holy Spirit say to you when you get alone with him? Follow the Spirit of God. Even if the home is the place of contention, he still wants you to be dedicated. The rules over slanderous talk are to bring it together. In chapter 22, verses 13 to 21, it talks about a husband accusing a wife because she doesn't like him anymore, or he doesn't like her anymore. You know, the relationship's gone sour. And even in there, it says there's rules over slanderous talk to bring it to an end, to have a showdown with outside help so that life can go on more pleasantly rather than remain in bitterness. He's saying don't leave it as it is, even if your neighbor is your spouse. So he calls for dedication in applying what God has done for you to your world. But he calls for cleanliness as well. I love that bit that we read. You all smiled and went, that's in the Bible, yeah. It's not someone else's job to bury your excrement. Carry your own shovel. Bury your own excrement. Do you know how fundamental that is? You expect everyone else to clean up your life, to help you through? Bury your own. Take responsibility for your own mess before other people step in it. Can you see how this applies? It requires you owning your own mess and saying, that's mine, I better bury it, so that other people don't step in it. Love your neighbor as yourself. Don't let them step in your mess. A simple phrase like that brings the grace of God to the real world. Just because God has dealt with your mess on the cross now doesn't give you permission to leave your mess all over the rest of the world. Bury it. It's profound, isn't it? Love your neighbor as yourself. Means other people don't have to clear up your mess. This is not just a word to teenagers and bedrooms, all right? Keeping them clean and so forth. It's also to adults making a mess in the lounge and saying, it's my house. Clean up your own mess. God calls you for cleanliness as part of your calling. And he calls you to compassion. If your neighbor is in need of help, don't take advantage of them. Help them. Here, God's Spirit is given to keep you wholesome. It's the Spirit of the law which is important. Don't try and take advantage of the law. This is something that we all do at times, I think. You know, it says in the Bible, you can pick grapes from my neighbor's vine as I'm walking through his field. Yeah, just have a, very nice. Yeah, you can do that. Don't take a basket with you, though. Don't flout the rules. And we all like to flout the rules. But you're called to be someone who doesn't. That doesn't cheat, doesn't steal, that acts honorably in all ways. Love your neighbor as yourself. You wouldn't like it if someone brought a basket or a barrel and started emptying all your crops into their things. Oh, well, it's okay. Don't try to take advantage of people through the letter of the law. If you find yourself becoming belligerent, you've got the wrong spirit within you. And if you don't know whether you're becoming belligerent or on the difference between being belligerent and on a holy quest for justice, ask your spouse or your family or your close friends. And let them be honest with you. Are you really doing the righteous thing? Or are you doing the awkward thing? They will tell you the truth. This group of people were on the brink of something new. They were standing before they went into the promised land. And Moses is speaking to them in front of Mount Ebal on the left, on the right, and Mount Gerizim on the left. The Mount of Blessing on this side, the Mount of Cursing on that side. And Moses is saying, choose. Choose who you are in God. Are you going to be the person who trusts in him and depends on him and changes because of him? Or are you going to be the person who's going to fight through life on your own and determined that no one gets the upper hand on you? I tell you, it's tiring. Loving your neighbor as yourself is a way of climbing the mountain of blessing. Yeah, that one. Sorry, it's reversed up there. The Mount of Blessing. This is the covenant in detail, which gives you and I the spirit of the law. And yet so many times, the lawyers came along and took the letter of the law and lost the spirit. If you do that in this section, then you're all guilty. Where's the tassels on your cloaks? And some of you are wearing dodgy clothes. And nearly all of you have mixed cotton with something else. Take it off. And then we'd be back where we were in Canaan. That's what they were doing. We're not here to throw guilt on each other. We're here to be the bestowers of grace and love and respecting one another. And these verses, strange as though they are, were an outworking of the law. How do you get God's heart into community? It's through God's people, you, overflowing with the love of God to your neighbors, to your friends, to your family, and to yourself. Will you do that this week? Will you bury your own excrement? Will you help your neighbor? When you see something that needs doing, will you do it? Because you are a servant of God. You watch how community grows when you do that.